So they tell you in seminary not to expect a great sermon every Sunday, that your congregation doesn't expect a great sermon every Sunday, but it does expect you to at least ask a great question. Now, I felt on safe ground there when I began planning the sermon before I left for Portland. After all, I knew that I would be addressing the Unitarian Universalist second principle, our promise to affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. You ought to be able to get a great question out of that. The first principle, which is much better known, affirms that each individual is inherently sacred. Each of us beat incomprehensible odds simply being born. Each of us arrives unique with a precious potential to bless the world. You, all of us here, and all of us who aren't here. I see the sacred in each of you that the first principle affirms. We all emerge from our mother's wombs worthy of worship. So for me, it's only when we get to the claims of the second principle that Unitarian Universalism veers into troubled waters. The second principle says, in effect, each life has inherent worth. So what? What are you going to do about it? That's the great question I offer you this morning. The second principle calls on UUs to show ourselves and the world what we congregations believe about the first principle, if we believe in it at all. A short answer is embedded in a wonderful sermon from 5 years ago by the Reverend Tandy Rogers. Now, Reverend Rogers' job at the time for the Unitarian Universalist Association included work to create and grow new congregations all around the country, but largely in the West because they were living in Seattle at the time. Now, as luck would have it, they found themselves seated next to two evangelical ministers on the airplane, one elderly and one very young. And they soon realized that they were returning home from a conference on church planting that Tandy had been hoping to attend. Tandy busily started taking notes about their conversation on the only thing she had handy, a copy of Star magazine. Eventually, Tandy couldn't help but identify themselves, despite their concerns that there would be a certain amount of hostility when they learned where they were coming from spiritually. The younger evangelist had never heard of Unitarian Universalism, so the older one said, "They're the ones that are all ethics with none of the doctrine. They do good without believing in hell." As Tandy described it, the younger evangelical looked as if he had suddenly been introduced to a unicorn. The older one smiled, put on his earphones, and settled back into cheerful silence. The ensuing conversation covered a lot of meaty ground, including an anxious moment when Tandy identified himself as bisexual. But the part I wanted to share this morning is Tandy's brilliant explanation of what it means to be alive. They told the young pastor that they believe we come out of the past that is good beyond our wildest comprehension, and that we enter a similar state when we die. And in between, we are here to live as the radical love rabbi named Jesus taught. Love God as you understand it with all your heart and soul and mind, and because you do that, love your neighbor as yourself. And then Tandy boiled it down further. We go from good to good, and in between, do good. The first time I saw this, I thought, wow, I never thought that an accordion would be the metaphor for life, but but in between, do good. So that's the second principle in a nutshell. You're alive, so do good by working for justice in human relations. Do good by working for fairness in human relations, which is what we mean by equity. Do good by being compassionate in human relations. That's it in a nutshell, but that's some nutshell. Good luck getting the meat out without a lot of bad things happening. It's true that we have no choice as Unitarian Universalists but to try. Resignation is an ugly alternative that denies our first principle. Whatever else we do as congregations, we must sustain faith that we can be braver and more effective together in promoting the second principle than any of us could be on our own. So here's a case in point. Currently, our congregation is part of the Northern New England District of Congregations, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. And this district is in the process of merging with the entire New England region. At the moment, the district apparatus exists mostly to manage an endowment. And the funds from that endowment basically go to pay for New England region staff, who used to be our district staff, in serving us. And so the current district is kind of just wasting money with a rump administrative function, and a merger makes a lot of sense. There's roughly $3.6 million to $4 million in the endowment fund. And at last April's meeting of the district, there was an explanation of what was going to be happening. And a number of us were at the meeting, and I drove home with Doug Richards. And about halfway home, I said to him, "You know what really bothered me about that? They discussed all of this about what's happening and what's logical and how the UUA wasn't going to waste our money. And no one even raised the slightest indication that all of this money is somehow tied up in 400 years of slavery and racial exploitation. It doesn't mean that the people who gave it to the district weren't being generous. It just means that the money they were giving was already tied up in the economic history of the United States, and the economic history of the United States is inextricable from its history of slavery." So I begin to wonder what was going on here. This is how systemic racism works, I think. You don't even think about how deeply buried it is in your systems. And so I wrote to the district people, and I said, "I'm a little upset about this," and they wrote back, "Well, we hope that you are aware that we've substantially supported the work of Black Lives of Unitarian Universalists and have this program to make a huge grant to them." So this was, in my eyes, saying they hadn't even heard my question, because all they had to do was look at who had donated to the challenge round for the Black Lives of UU, and they would see that this congregation had already given multiple times. So of course we were aware of the Blue program, and it is a great program. And I'm not sure that we fully subscribed every dollar they were looking from us, but we were way ahead of a lot of congregations, and that's not the point. They were using this very generous thing they had done for Black Lives of UU to sort of vaccinate themselves against thinking that they had more anti-racism work to do, rather than realizing that every time you touch your money, you are dealing with systemic racism, if you don't at least think about this. It doesn't give you the answer what you're supposed to do, but if you don't think about it, that's what systemic racism buried in your organization looks like. So I wanted to do something about this. So I started to get in touch with ministers. I sent out a blanket email to the UU ministers of New England, and nothing came back. And this doesn't mean they're bad people. This just means that most of them don't read their email thoroughly. And probably there's some people in this room who would have to cop to the same thing. So then I began reaching out to some people in the wider movement who I trust, and I started to make some progress in how I needed to think about this. And the person who really made the biggest difference for me was Cheryl Walker, our minister in Wilmington, North Carolina, and current president of the UU Ministers Association. And she said two important things. She said to me, "I think that the UUA at least under this president, Reverend Susan Frederick Gray, is truly committed to our work of dismantling racism. Now that meant a lot to me because this was the voice of an African-American woman saying that. And then Cheryl said, and she can be frank with me because we've known each other for a long time, "So you've had this money up there in New England under your control for all these years, and what did you do with it?" She said, "I can tell you, not much." "And now that it's going somewhere else, you want them to fight racism with it." I was able to fill in some blanks from there. First, our congregation needs to begin with the confession that it is not the New England District Board, but all of us who've been failing to do enough to combat systemic racism. And we have to recognize that what we have done in this congregation, the public Black Lives Matter stand, the support for the local Stand Up for Racial Justice group, all the reading we've done, the contributions to Blue, it's good, but it's not heroic and it's not sufficient. It's not a get out of jail pass to not do any more. Second, we have to make some decisions about how to go further. And third, we have to try to create a mass movement among the congregations of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine to follow this course. And fourth, we should come together at the April district meeting in support of a strong resolution recognizing how white supremacy is alive and kicking in our endowment, and praying that the UUA does a better job of rooting it out than we have once the merger is completed. And perhaps we can request that the UUA clearly designate some of the funds for anti-racism work with us, the congregations of the Northern New England District. The second principle calls us not into what our forebears imagined was a purely spiritual life in a heaven that is good, but deeper into embodied life doing good. And one thing that makes it harder, I realized this week, is that we live in OK Boomer times. In case you missed it, OK Boomer has become the hot, new, sarcastic, and sometimes bitter response of millennials and Generation Z, roughly speaking the people born from 1980 to 2010, to criticisms and helpful advice from my generation, the so-called baby boomers who preceded them. In one recently popular example on YouTube, a 25-year-old member of New Zealand's parliament, a Green Party, who was in the middle of talking about some important environmental legislation, was getting heckled by an older legislator who was opposed to this legislation, and she shut him up simply by saying, "Okay, boomer," and plowing ahead with her argument. Now, the "okay, boomer" meme is rooted in beliefs that we baby boomers have utterly failed to practice justice, equity, or compassion toward the generations following in our wake. OK Boomer is a way of saying, in just two dismissive words, anything from "you failed, so shut up," to "you're too old in your memories to get what's really going on in our lives." Now, I have this to say about the OK Boomer movement, and I hope I'll be forgiven for not being too pro-boomer in what I'm saying. This movement is going to be here and gone in a moment. Not because it has no plug into any truth, but because it exists primarily on Facebook and other platforms of social media that work by grabbing our attention and tickling emotional buttons. It's an example of how social media manipulates us and distracts us. One thing I see in its sudden eruption, and it's really been around for over a year, but only come to public attention in a big way in the last month. One thing I see in all this is a reminder that paying attention to where we need to pay attention is a basic spiritual discipline. In that vein, I've been thinking about Mary Oliver's poem, Gratitude. The Portland congregation has used it as a way into their theme for this month, which is attention. And you use love, Mary Oliver. We love her for her insistence that the natural world connects us to our true selves. This poem spotlights a shortcoming in our first principle, which focuses on human worth and dignity to the exclusion of anything else in nature. Surely Mary Oliver is right that it is not just humans who have inherent worth and dignity. But this poem also illuminates a shortcoming in Mary Oliver as a spiritual guide. She has only one message about how to be reverent. She is rarely concerned, in poetry at least, with what it means to do good for other humans. To be blunt, she treats being with other humans as a hindrance to spirituality. In gratitude, Oliver asks 8 wonderful questions. What did you notice? What did you hear? What did you admire? What astonished you? What would you like to see again? What was most tender? What was most wonderful? And finally, what did you think was happening? Now, if you ask these questions in the natural world, as he suggests, the gods will shake us from our sleep. To what end? To grasp one by one the miraculous beauty and diversity of the world we inhabit? I guess that's important. That will help us walk humbly on the earth. But there has to be more if the gods are shaking us awake. And it's in Denise Levertov I find a poetic answer in our second reading. I and my kind, we battle a wakeful way through our lives. We must all be awake not only to the rest of nature, as Oliver beckons us, but also to what is unique in human society and relations. What did you think was happening cannot be heard inside of a congregation like CVUS in the same way we hear it in a meadow or a forest. But it is no less holy and poetic a question when you means you all. So what do you think is happening here this morning? Look, hear, smell, touch as attentively as you can, all those things that Mary Oliver teaches, yes. But how we can do good together will always be a great question, requiring more of us than close individual attention. It is only together that humans can do a planet justice, not take more than our share of its riches on a meaningful scale, and educate all of our children to be stunned at Earth's glories. This is why we affirm our principles as congregations and not as individuals. Now, I invite you in.